Positive Parenting is brought to you by Town Square Television. Find out more at townsquare.tv.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Positive Parenting. I'm your host, Luke Spigloff, therapist and parent educator. Positive Parenting is a show for parents to help them with the sometimes difficult job of raising children in today's world. And today, we're going to talk about a subject that most every parent deals with at some level, sometimes every day, and that's disciplining your child. But it's not just disciplining your child, it's how to do that effectively and how to do that in a way that connects with your kid. And so, as always, we bring in the experts, and tonight we brought in Jim and Lynn Jackson. Thank you so much for coming.
She's the expert.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
Just filling the gaps.
Jim and Lynn have founded a ministry that really helps parents connect with their kids and really turning them not really from into allies rather than adversaries in when disciplining their kids. So, and your ministry has grown to workshops, books, sounds like counseling, coaching, just a range of of services and resources to parents. So it's so great that you can come here tonight and share your expertise with us. Yeah. So maybe talk a little bit, I mean, you deal with parents on a probably daily, if not weekly basis, and talk about maybe some of the common mistakes you see parents making, particularly when trying to discipline their kids.
You know, to call what we observe mistakes, I mean, we all make them. Maybe they're mistakes. Maybe they're just being a little bit misguided. I think every parent is well-intended, and they act on those good intentions, I think sometimes pretty ineffectively, thinking that getting kids to behave ought to be the goal. And as we see it, getting underneath sort of the layers of what's going on when kids are struggling behaviorally to what's going on inside of them and asking deeper questions, not just how do I get them to behave, but what are they believing and why are they acting this way, and how is what I'm doing contributing to that, maybe unwittingly, is something that we think is just really important for parents to look at, and very few parents do look at that because we're just moving so fast and we want to get things done in a hurry, and so we can come in and intimidate our way into it and get done what we want to get done in the short term without really thought for the long-term impact of that.
So kind of what he's talking about is really looking below the surface at what's going on in our heart. So, for example, when our youngest, when our oldest was young, he was very intense, and he and I butted heads a lot. And I engaged with those interactions with sort of an underlying belief that was, I'm an angry mom raising an angry child. I mean, it's be a teenager. It's going to be horrible. So I had to stop and look at, oh my goodness, this just isn't about using the right consequences to get him to change. It's about backing up and going, what's going on in me? Mm-hmm. What am I believing and thinking about this that's really affecting our interaction? And so when I dug deeper and switched that around and really embraced some different things, I realized I'm an intense mom raising an intense child, and we butt heads, but we love each other. Now, just that shift in belief was very significant in changing the tone of our interactions. But you wouldn't find it in a parenting tips book.
Right.
So it started by looking below the surface. Right. And that's one of the key things that parents miss because they're focused on the tips to get their kids to behave.
Right, right. And looking for the short-term quick fix rather
than exactly.
the long-term. Right, right. And I'm sure you guys deal with a pretty wide range of kids and ages as the parents come to you with particular concerns. What have you kind of noticed maybe some of the themes that you maybe see over the course of the lifespan of kids? You know, how is it different when the kids are younger versus maybe that awkward middle school years to the high school level? Just, I know it's kind of a big question, but maybe start with the little ones.
Well, I think with the young ones, as soon as they start to get cognitive, like they can begin to understand that the difference between yes and no, and these young ones want to experiment with who they are and figure out what they can and can't do and where their power is and where it isn't. And so parents will say, no, don't do that. And you know, whether it's touch the candle or whether it's mess up the magazines on the coffee table or spill the milk or whatever, no, don't do that. And kids, you know, my kid did this to me, would just look back up at me and go, oh, really? Ka-chee! You know, I'm going to show you that I can do this. And so then there's this, you know, early on, big emphasis on getting kids to do immediately what I say they ought to do without any conversation and, you know, really work on being the authoritative parent that gets them to obey me. you know, I think as they grow older, you know, there's a little bit more of a curiosity, and there's a lot more questions that are involved, and kids become, as they become more capable, what we can expect of them to do and not do and follow through on and understand seems to increase. But I think what parents do is they take some of the dynamics of parenting a little child into the dynamics of parenting maybe a preschool or a first grade child, and think that, you know, it should work the way that it did when they were little. And of course, it doesn't, and parents get frustrated, and then, like Lynn said, kind of tend to start acting out of frustration sometimes.
So, like, one of the things we talk about is really asking kids a lot of questions to help them think through wise choices in a certain situation. And parents tend to think of that as teenage years, and for sure that's the heartbeat of parenting a teenager. But we can back that up farther than we realize to really get younger kids thinking about that as well. So, for example, I was with a little boy who was playing really roughly with a truck near some other kids, and he was just zooming it back and forth like this. And
like a four-year-old kid.
Like a four-year-old kid, yep. And I could have gone over and just said, that is not okay, that's dangerous, and if you continue, I'm going to take the truck away. Very logical consequence. But I wanted to ask him questions to help him think this through. So I got down and I connected first, and I said, wow, cool truck, isn't it? Yeah, zoom, zoom. And then I said, what do you think will happen if you keep playing with the truck like that? Zoom, zoom, I don't know. It was too broad a question. So then I could have just jumped in with the consequence, but I made it more specific, more concrete. I said, what do you think might happen to the truck? He goes, might break it. I went, oh, that's good thinking. What do you think might happen to the little kids near you? Might get hurt. That's good thinking too. So how do you want to play with the truck? And I'll never forget, he just looks up and goes, slower. And I watched, and he did really well. And I didn't want to add, and if you don't, I'm taking it away. Because as it was, he was motivated by kindness, responsibility, respect for others, people's property. And if I had just said, if you don't, I'm taking this away, he would have been motivated by selfishness. So this thing that we think is just for teenagers, we can back it up quite a bit, you know, into those early years and really develop kids that are responsible when we're not around.
Right. And it goes back actually to the point you guys were making earlier. It sounds like it you know, this is not a quick fix. This is takes time, takes patience. Things that, you know, sometimes are in short supply as a parent. I'm wondering if you have maybe other questions you might use with kids to kind of prompt them to be thinking and processing their behavior.
I worked for a long time with high-risk teenagers, and I learned a set of questions working with them that actually I've seen be effective with kids as young as two. And it's, you know, if a child is doing something they ought not do and gotten themselves into a mess or into a fight or into a what, you know, to just come in and wow, this is kind of not going so well, is it? What do you want to do to take care of it? Oh, well, do you want some help or do you want to do it by yourself?
Right.
You know, I want to do it by myself, a three-year-old. And we've had many three-year-olds say, by myself.
Right.
Oh, okay. Well, let me know if you need more help and cleaning up that mess. Or, well, even, I mean, we had a little guy we worked with named Eli, and he was two. And we got a little videotape of him. And,
right.
I want to do it by myself. Right. Only it was just self. That's how he said it.
Right.
He picked up the blocks and was as happy as could be.
So just the basic questions of, what's going on here? What's happening? What's going on? And then what do you think we should do about it?
So it's like a curious stance, really, is rather than an accusative.
Well, and that's a really subtle but very important thing, which is it's not just a trick to get your kid to clean up their mess. It truly is curiosity. Like, can I come to a little child, a fifth grade child, or even a 17-year-old child, with a true sense of curiosity? What do you figure you want to do about this? And what might I do to help you without having a preconceived idea of how they should answer so they get it right?
Right.
Just what you said about tone of voice. What's going on in here is very different from, what's going on in here? And what should we do about it?
You know, a major emphasis in your work is trying to help parents stay connected to their kids. Now, you just mentioned at-risk kids and maybe some of the tougher kids. And, you know, when you got a parent who's frustrated, maybe burnt out to some degree, and they're like, you know, they aren't feeling very connected to their kid in the moment and maybe questioning can they really, you know, draw deep into that, you know, sense of patience? And be, how do you, what do you tell parents at that moment?
Well, you know, number one, what we tell parents is we're going to mess up a lot. And and in fact, one of our teaching points, I think I'm more familiar with this even than Lynn, is that for me, one of my greatest teachers to my children was my humility when I'd blown it. So when I was impatient, I would lose my patience, and I would say things I wish I hadn't said, and I would treat kids or even my spouse in a way I wish I hadn't. And the way that I did my best teaching with those kids was to go back and say, you know, the way I talked just there, that's not how I want to be. That's that's not how I want to talk to you, and that's not what you deserve. You deserve something different. Here's what it is. But before we get there, would you forgive me for that? So, you know, going back, admitting what I had done wrong humbly, asking for forgiveness was one of my most powerful teachers.
Sure.
I mean, I know that parents have a hard time accessing the things they're learning proactively when they're in the heat of the moment, just like the field goal kicker of the Vikings has never gotten a chance to practice that stress before, and so it was really difficult for him the first time. I'm guessing next time he'll do better.
Might be too soon, yeah.
Wait another year.
Yeah, we'll get sidetracked onto that. One of the things we talk about, because your question was really about how do you refresh a parent's heart of connection for a child that's really struggling, that there's just a lot of discouragement and resentment. And one of the things we talk about that's kind of a unique thing to our teaching is to help parents look for what we call the gift gone awry. So, you know, a child that's just really domineering and expressive and loud and, you know, that kind of thing can really be a child that has great leadership potential if they're guided well. So to have a vision for, wow, you know, what's happening right now is this great potential coming out in an unhelpful way. But if I really have a vision for seeing it long term, you know, that encourages and motivates me as a parent. So when my, you know, we were on this just revolving door about trying to stop our son's bossiness, you know, and it was like he wanted to run the family. And when I got that sense of, you know, I remember saying to him one day, Daniel, you know, you really have a gift of leadership. How you're using it with your siblings right now, I don't think is going to prepare you well for how you could use that in the future. Would you like some help with that? So it's that vision for the upside of the things our kids that are struggling with that can encourage a parent as well as a child.
We spend a lot of time inviting parents to go on a treasure hunt for what's good rather than a mine hunt for what's bad.
Is there ever a time where it might make sense to not even have the conversation with your kid in the moment? I mean, if a parent is so overwhelmed that maybe they're just not in a in a place to be able to do that, is that okay?
Absolutely.
Tell the bathroom timeout story.
Yeah, there was a mom that was really working on calming down, being respectful in conflict, and not reacting and micromanaging everything. And so we wrote down just some key truths that she could hang on to in the heat of the moment. You know, things like, my value does not come from how my son's hair look when he goes out the door. You know, stuff like that. You know, I'm okay. I love my kids. You know, just things like that. So she wrote them down on a card and was working on memorizing them. But so in the middle of arguments with her sons, she'd just go, you know what? I need to go to the bathroom right now. And she'd go to the bathroom where her little card was tucked into the linen closet. She'd take a breath, read it, and then go back out and reengage with her kids, calmer. They eventually asked, Mom, what are you doing in the bathroom all this time? So she brought him in and showed them her card. And it was a great way for her to model hanging on to grace and truth in the heat of the moment.
Well, hold those thoughts. You guys have lots of great ideas. I want to come back to you in just a few minutes, and we're going to talk more about this. And please, you stay tuned. We'll be back in a few minutes, and we'll be talking more with Jim and Lynn about how to do discipline that connects with your kids. We'll be right back.
Town Square Television offers professional video production classes. Classes include high-definition camera, studio production, non-linear editing, and mobile truck production. Our classes provide a hands-on approach that will prepare and advance your knowledge in the digital media field. To learn more about Town Square Television and to sign up for state-of-the-art video production classes, go go to townsquare.tv.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. Before break, we were talking to Jim and Lynn Jackson about discipline that connects with your kids. And we're going to go back to Jim and Lynn. Welcome back.
Thanks.
And we were actually just talking on break, Jim, and you were talking about kind of the big picture, the overarching principles that kind of guide your work with parents. And
yeah.
So maybe could you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah. So in short, over the years as I was working with parents, it became clear that there was just some really core fundamental things that were really helpful for parents who were struggling. Especially those parents who are struggling with some method, like what method should we use to get our kids to behave the way we want them to, seem to be a formula for locking parents, and especially sort of those wired kids, the intense kids, in endless power struggles. And they would come to me for help. And one day I had a conversation with a parent who was particularly troubled, and he listed 50 different things that he wanted his kids to get and learn, but none of it was landing. Like, what's wrong with this kid?
Right.
And out of that conversation, Lynn and I did some brainstorming and came up with really kind of a frame of four primary goals that we could have as parents, really for engaging behavior of all kinds. And it's not a set of things you should do to get your kids to behave as much as it is a set of four core beliefs that we think it's important for all people to grow into emotional, spiritual, psychological health. And so the four messages became the primary goals for our framework. And the messages are, if we think about coming to the challenges with the goal of making sure a child knows you're safe with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the protector of you, I'm your ally, not your enemy.
Right.
Your love, no matter what. We call these first two messages, you're safe and you're loved, a message of grace. Like, can we give our kids a position, a relationship of grace that frees them to struggle and knows that that's never up for grabs?
Right.
And then out of that, we grow into messages of accountability. The first one is a message, you're capable. Mm-hmm. You're built to do cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final message is you're responsible for your life. You're not responsible for me and my well-being.
Mm-hmm.
You're responsible for you and yours. And so that milk that you spilled all over in defiance of me doesn't have the power to affect my well-being. This is about you, and you're responsible for it. And so when you want to get on with life, I'm here with you. I can help you. Let's talk. But you got to clean up the milk because you're responsible for that.
Right.
So it's those four messages that have really powerfully guided parents. We make a refrigerator magnet out of that. And parents tell us years later after getting that refrigerator magnet, that's our guidepost.
Right.
That's the lens through which we view all the different ideas that people give us for how to get our kids to behave.
Because
if it's not doing these messages with our kids, it's just a new different form of manipulation, really.
What do you do? And we had touched on this in the first segment, but just about, you know, difficult kids, and I'm thinking particularly as kids go into adolescence, and the things just may get bigger and they'll get scarier. You know, there's chemical use with kids, you know, sexual activity, you know, just, or at least the temptations of all those things.
Sure.
What do you tell parents of responding to kids who may be falling into those behaviors or at least experimenting with those behaviors? How might things be similar or different?
Yeah. Well, that's scary stuff.
Right.
And so for sure to validate that fear is important to parents. So if parents come to us and they've got that fear and it's super real, to tell them they shouldn't feel that way it doesn't help them.
Right.
So it's a very real fear. How is that fear helping you do what you want with your kids, or how is it getting in the way? It is an important question for parents to think about, and the answer is different for everyone, but we want to help parents understand sometimes it's the fear and the anxiety that drives them to do the parenting they do. And as soon as we parent especially our teenage kids, who are already sensitive, they're already feeling a sense of shame, their radar is already up for our disappointment for them. If we come at them with our fear and our anxiety, it's almost sure to drive them further away from us relationally.
Yeah.
So the real challenge is to invite parents, what are the ways, even if there's not very many, that you can find to be reconnected to this child? What are the things, even minute as they might be, that you could do to connect? So one dad, scared, anxious, the whole thing, every time he says, every time I talk to her, I lose it.
Right.
It's like, well, do you text message? Well, yeah. Well, do you think you could text message her? Well, yeah, but what would I say? I said, I don't know. What's the shortest three words you think of to put together to say on a text message? I love you to my daughter? Sure, why not? Give it a whirl. Well, just that, and then other texts, and little by little by little. Now he's communicating. Now there's a little bit of an intersection of something they can share joyfully, difficult as everything else is. And then next thing I know, he's telling me that she wants him to take him to the rock concert. And he's like, I'd take my daughter to a rock concert? But he built it little by little through those little intersections of joy.
But no matter what age kid, you know, relating to our kids starts with that feeling of safety. And so for a little child, that looks like mom's not going to explode at me and give me a walloping. But for an older teen, that's about, you know, mom and dad are not going to be trying to manipulate me so that their anxiety goes down. So for example, when we were kind of working with one of our teens who was struggling with some screen use, I got in touch with the fact that, oh, when he's on the computer, I feel more anxious when he's playing his video games, and when he's off, I feel better. So I better get in touch with the fact that this is really about managing my anxiety. So when we can come to our kids and just go, I can be okay when you are not, that doesn't mean I don't care, but, you know, I can be peaceful even when you're struggling, and that's a position of strength from which we can really help our kids.
There's a theme I'm hearing what you're saying too. It's a bit of just meeting kids where they're at instead of expecting them to be what maybe they're not, at least at that point in time. Could you talk a little bit about that? Just maybe that, you know, certain kids present certain challenges. Kids may have certain disabilities. Just how does that play into what's expected?
I have an occupational therapy background, and one of the terms that we always used in the clinic was just finding the just right challenge for kids. So for some kids, especially those that are struggling more or have a disability, it's like parents, you know, have these expectations of the kids that they really can't meet. And then it sets up a cycle of discouragement and punishment and more discouragement and more punishment. So finding that just right challenge for the child. So if you have a child with some sensory sensitivities and ADHD and they just get overwhelmed and disorganized really easily, you know, if you want them to clean up their room, you have to get it in a bite-sized chunk that's the right challenge for them. They have a decent shot at being successful, and then you've got something to affirm and encourage, and then that creates the brain pathways that next time they're going to be able to take just a little bigger chunk as you work towards growing independence.
So there's that, you know, that's on the practical level, but then the other kind of more on the empathetic side is just asking the question. What is it like to be my child right now? I mean, I've got all my assumptions about what's right and what's wrong, what they should do and what they shouldn't do, and they've probably heard me lecture about that 100 times. But it's been really helpful for parents of kids of all ages, really, but especially as they approach teen years, to just ask the question, what's it like to be my child? And if you feel like you don't know, it's okay to ask. Like, you know, I realize the way I've been treating you hasn't been getting us where maybe I'd like to go. How about you? Where would you like to go with this? And what's it like to be you when that happens? And when kids get permission to tell their parents hard things and then don't get beat up for it, like, how dare you think that way? But, you know, Dad, it just is a really, I feel like I don't even want to be with you when you act that way. To be able as a dad then to say, oh, man, that's not what I want. Can you tell me what would help you want to be with me more? And give kids a voice.
It goes back to that theme you talked about, curiosity with coupled with openness, it seems like, that you're willing to you know, receive whatever you're going to get from your kid.
Well, we have a phrase, relaxed curiosity.
Curiosity. But that's all in this, like, how do I build this nest of grace for my kids where they know they're safe with me, they know they're loved no matter what, they can wrestle through things, struggle through things. You know, I had a dad call me today. How do I talk to my son? Because I know he's starting to look at stuff he ought not look at on the computer. And I'm afraid anything I say is just going to... It's like, well, how did you find out in the first place? Well, he told me he was starting to be tempted. And then one day he just kind of dropped it on me. And so now here I'm sitting here with this information. I said, what did you do to be safe enough for your 15-year-old son to tell you that? Because whatever it is that you did, it'd be cool if you could do more of that. How did he feel safe to do that with you in the first place?
Your work comes from a Christian perspective. And so I'd be curious, how has that shaped maybe... how you formulated your principles just in your work with parents and that type of thing.
Yeah, well, you've heard me use the language of grace.
Sure, sure.
I mean, for us, the model of God's love, which is a love that doesn't have strings and loves us where we're at and for who we are, is really a starting place for that. Like, how can I, as a parent, embody that for my kids in such a way that it sort of opens the conduit of their heart for that sort of relationship moving forward? So that's a big piece of it. And then, you know, Lynn is a voracious student of Scripture, and let you speak, I suppose, to that just a little bit.
Oh, we have so many verses that really guide our thinking, but mm-hmm. one it's kind of an unusual one as a parenting verse, but it's really key is Luke 1:17, and it talks about John the Baptist coming to prepare the way for Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he's got 2 points to his job description. The first one is turn the hearts of the parents to their children. So that's his number one priority, to pave mm-hmm. the way for Christ. And then the second one is to turn the disobedient, and it doesn't say to obedience, but it says to the wisdom of the righteous. Mm-hmm. To make ready a people prepared for the Lord. Mm. So as you think about that, that gives us such guidance, and it's mm-hmm. kind of like the nest of grace that he was talking about, keeping our hearts connected to our kids, but then teaching them wisdom.
Right.
So in our parenting, we have a lot of focus on keeping your hearts connected to your kids and growing them in the kind of wisdom that's going to help them to make really good choices when you're not around.
Right. Talk a little bit just you know, do you have non-Christian parents coming to you? And is there at times, right, that how do you help them, even though they may not share the same beliefs, but mm-hmm. how do you help them engage
yeah,
in that
so,
same message?
So part one of the question is, do we have non-Christians come? Of course, mm-hmm. all the time.
Right.
And for years, my goal has been less to push my agenda on them and more to help them open themselves up to some source of life, of well-being that's bigger than their child, that's mm-hmm. bigger than their accomplishments. Mm-hmm. And so we'll frequently ask that question, you know, what source do you lean on in order to be okay, so that when your kids are out of sorts, you can still find a way into peace and comfort and calmness and come to them, because the biggest mm-hmm. gift that you can bring a child when they're struggling is your peace, your sense of calmness and confidence. So it's just an open question, and, you know, parents will reflect on it all sorts of different ways, and then we'll go from there.
Mm-hmm. You've shared some helpful information in it. I'm wondering if I'd like to hear more about your website and resources available, or resources even outside of that.
We have a website called connectedfamilies.org and have lots of resources on it. We've got 2 books. We do an online course, which is a way for parents really to dive into these mm-hmm. messages. Because it's focused on discipline. It's called Discipline That Connects with Your Child's Heart. We're actually starting it up just beginning of February, so they can go to the website and find out about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Drop us an email.
Connectedfamilies.org?
Connectedfamilies.org.
Yeah.
Great.
Yep. Yeah, and mm-hmm. We're writing all the time, and our content managers put it up there, but I think there's 4 or 5 blogs a week that go out, and you can get on a mailing list and just get stuff fed. We have a Facebook page that's just Connected Families, and you can like us.
We've got people like us, honey.
I know. It's really been fun to see the online availability just spread our message around the world. Yeah. I mean, I've coached people in Peru. We've had people in Australia.
Right.
We've got a little enclave in Australia that's starting
and now
up.
Now China.
China.
Wow. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
it's an amazing thing.
It's fun. It's really been fun.
Well, thank you so much, Jim and Lynn, for sharing your message with us tonight, and hopefully our viewers can benefit greatly from that.
Fantastic to be here. Thanks for having us.
If you have questions about today's show or suggestions for future shows, please do not hesitate to contact us. You can do so at townsquare.tv. Thanks for viewing, and we'll see you again real soon.
Positive Parenting is brought to you by Town Square Television. Find out more at townsquare.tv.